Welcome to the new For Purpose CEO podcast.
I'm Michelle.
I am Danielle. And we are here to talk about being a CEO in the for purpose sector. Each episode, we will talk about issues not-for-profit and for-purpose CEOs need to manage based on our 30-plus years of experience. It will be an honest discussion of the highs and the lows, helping you tackle the unique challenges of running a NFP.
Leading can be challenging and sometimes lonely. We get it. Join us and our guests weekly for an honest discussion about running a for-purpose organisation. We will be sharing practical tips, shared experiences and real-world stories to help you tackle the unique challenges of running a for-purpose organisation.
Okay, so today we're going to talk about how to write a good briefing paper. Now, when we started thinking about this topic, it was really interesting because we thought, no, that's a bit too boring. And then when we started talking about it, we actually got a lot of people say that would be really helpful and really practical. But also then we started thinking about all the things to do with briefing papers and why you would be writing one. And actually we thought, okay, instead of just talking about it, we now should just push record and we should actually do an episode on a briefing paper. So it's not going to be as boring as we thought it might be.
But hopefully it'll be helpful.
But I think as a CEO, I think there's two decisions. One is whether you write the briefing paper at all, because sometimes there's a lot of information and, you know, does it just go in your CEO report or is it a standalone report? So like, do you do it as a briefing paper? So why? And then I think what's in it? What's a good structure for the briefing paper? To do the why bit first, and in my experience, it's a proposed strategic initiative that you want approval. So it might be a bit of a business case on something, or it might be something that's about to happen or you think is going to happen and you're proposing a response or a reaction or to change direction in relation to it. But interestingly, just as we were talking before recording, Danielle, you brought up, and yes, of course, it's true, you could also be writing a briefing paper for a committee or the board. So it's actually, you could be writing it for two quite separate audiences, not completely unrelated. Or you could be writing a briefing paper, I guess, to seek permission to either get funding or reallocate funding or allocate funding or get a board endorsement if you're kind of at a milestone decision. So there's a number of, I guess, times or reasons why you might be writing a briefing paper.
Yeah, I first want to acknowledge, and we were talking about this earlier, is like you don't really get trained to write briefing papers. There's sort of, you know, I think, and we were talking about people who've grown up through an organization or through not-for-profit, there's very little training on writing briefing papers. So people kind of muddle through that. And I think that that's why it's important we talk about it. And that having a structure to the briefing paper, which is standardized and consistent, also is really helpful for both the author and also the reader as well. But I know when I write briefing papers, I'm always thinking I need the board to do one of three things with this briefing paper. Either make a decision on a recommendation that I'm putting forward to them.
So approve something or agree that you can spend money or reallocate funding to a certain line item or whatever. Yep.
Or I'm asking them, I'm giving them an update on something and I need discussion from them. So I'm actually seeking input from them. So it might be more of a progress. We're working on a particular strategic initiative. We're at a milestone point to what you said. This is what we're at, what I'm actually thinking. And now I want some input from the board. It's at a point where we might need a little bit of direction. So I might be asking for discussion or insights from the board to help form the next stage.
So strategic guidance as to direction you might be going. I mean, I'm thinking in multiple things. It could be about a strategic initiative or a plan, but it also almost could be in looking at your next strategic plan. You're saying, okay, here's some really big issues that we need to think about that may or may not take priority over the next few years for us. And so here's a briefing paper on some of those topics or issues that we're then going to discuss.
Yeah, that's right.
Kind of in lead up to our strategic plan.
But for that briefing paper, you're actively seeking input from the board. And I think that that's helpful because that can help you as a CEO frame out what you're doing next. And therefore, it's not a surprise to the board either when you're giving an update. Mm-hmm. And the third one, so always it's either a decision, it's either here's something I want the board to discuss, or it's something for noting. And we talked earlier, it's like, well, is a briefing paper for noting or not? But if there is a standardized report that the board's asked for that you present to them, it could just simply be, I'm giving this to you to note. You've got it, you've received it. So I always work on those three.
Yeah, but even then for noting, what I have seen as well is it might be for noting at the moment because we think a decision's coming up, or we think in another month or two you'll be asked to make a decision. So again, I would always ask the why, like why am I giving you this? Why am I writing this? And what do I want from it? Because even though if you don't want something right now, you might need a decision a bit later.
I first kind of frame is what is it that I need from the board, because that's what I'm going to put right up front.
Yeah, or the committee, I guess. But yes, board. Let's assume it's a board for the moment.
That's right. So it's the what do I need from them that goes right up front for me, so that the reader, when they're reading the rest of it, go, I'm reading this because the author needs this particular thing from me. And I find that that's super helpful. Which then frames around the why as well. So then that why, or that context, or that background, why am I giving you this information or this briefing?
Well, yeah, and as a reader, you know that, right? Why am I reading this? It's really helpful to have that why, so that when you read it, you've got, this is why I'm reading it. Okay, cool. So let's go to a structure, because I think, you know, and to be really specific, and I guess to me, I'm quite particular on some things like reports. And, you know, I really want some key things up the top, really clearly laid out, you know, all quite pedestrian, but I think if they're not there, it just looks a bit sloppy and doesn't look great, you know. So briefing paper, like a proper title, you know, the date it's prepared.
Who's the author?
Who's the author? And also some ways I also say who's contributed, because if it's not just you, I would put your other team members. I think that's a appropriate thing to do. So, yeah, what do you want? Like, is this for decision, for noting, for recommendation, for discussion, whatever? Like, actually put that there.
I also include if a board committee has reviewed it. So I want the board to know that if it's already been through the committee, that they can see that the committee has already discussed it. They would also see that in committee minutes if that's included in the board papers or the board pack. But I like to put that up front. The board,
and I guess not just that they've reviewed it, right, that they – Endorse it.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So what's the purpose of the paper, really? Recommendations, if there's recommendations, right? What are you recommending the board do? Make a decision or whatever you're asking the board to do. And then why it's coming to the board, right? The context in which this paper is written, or the background. And short background, but, you know, setting the scene as to why this paper is being presented to the board.
Yeah. Yeah. I would probably, one of the things that I do as well, if it is requiring a decision, I don't know if you do this or if you're seeing this, but if it is requiring a decision from the board, I would put the recommendation and then I would draft a board resolution, and then I would go into the background or the context. So clearly labeled as a draft resolution, because that resolution might change at the board meeting depending on the decision, and it should align with that recommendation as well. And then go into the background, it being a very short background that just gives the board context. And it could have been, we spoke about this particular thing on this date. This is what the board requested. So there's a linking statement for them as well. It's not come out of the blue.
Yeah, or there's been mergers in the sector and we think this, or like whatever. Like, I think that context is important. And again, short as possible. Hopefully they are across that context, but it just directs their attention and frames it. And then I guess your analysis of the situation, your reasoning, I guess, for your recommendations and options, you know, giving the board some options. Like, it might be that it's that we agree to commit this funding for XYZ project, or that we start this project. And I'm sort of thinking in terms of things that I've gone through. Like, it might be we need to invest in a new CRM, or we might need to invest in a new whatever, whether IT system or upgrade. Or it might be that we're looking at collaboration with another sector organisation, and why, you know. So your analysis, so the options are go, no go, partial go, you know, like really, and I'm actually being simplistic about it because the language I think matters. So you have to sort of pick language that works. But I think you give them options.
That's right. And then that links then to your recommendation, right? So that's why they can then see that you've considered all of those options and the analysis that you've provided and why you drew the recommendation that you've put right up the front.
Yep. And I think with each option, you should also put the, well, I guess that we would call them the pros and cons in normal language, but, you know, the risks of each. What I've seen as well, which I quite like, is the risk of doing it and then the risk of not doing it.
I tend to frame it risk and opportunity, but not too dissimilar, because that's right. And I've seen this a lot in not-for-profits where they've been presented with a whole bunch of risks of the options that they actually don't do anything. And that's a risk in itself. And then they don't make a decision, and that is a decision in itself, but not understanding that that also has risks, because often people don't actually put the option in of do nothing.
Yeah. And I do think that is very important that you put the options, and one of them is to not do, you know, say you've got three options and you as CEO are really asking to do option one, but there are also obviously option two and three. I do think you put the risks of all three options, and that includes the risk of not doing all of them. You will have your preferred option or what you consider to be the better option for the organisation. So, yeah, so the risks and the implications, and that could be pretty broad or pretty narrow depending on what the particular thing is. Your risk could be, you know, old technology. The risk could be left behind. The risk could be that the sector's changing or that there's other mergers. Like, you know, you'll have to pick what the implications of doing and not doing is. And then I guess I'm just sort of trying to think in terms of headings. The next headings are really, I guess, more in terms of if we assume a decision's made, then like what are our next steps? So what are the next steps you're hoping for the board? So yes, one, a decision, but then what? Like, is there funding implications? Is there staffing implications? Is there like, what are the next steps you want them to know need to happen if we make this decision?
Decision. Absolutely. And then again, that all has to link into that recommendation, and also if you put a draft resolution in there as well, so the board are not having to make all those links themselves. I also think, I mean, I made that comment earlier, you know, if you've kind of grown up within the sector, you often don't get training on briefing papers, and the structure is important, but I think the language and tone becomes important as well. So using a really active tone in your narrative, not using sector jargon, and not using acronyms that are very meaningful to all of us who work day to day in it, but is meaningless to somebody who's not in it all the time.
Or the way I do it is you spell it out the first time and then you brackets put the acronym in. I normally put it in bold, close brackets, and then you can refer to it. So when you're reading it, that bold is going to stand out. I mean, you can put a list of acronyms if there's a lot of them at the back, obviously, but
takes too long to keep that list up to date.
Well, that's the thing, right? Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes.
That could be a full-time job in this sector. So you want to avoid that operational jargon or those acronyms or, Unless they're relevant. But you've got to explain it out. That's exactly right, as you said. Use the word, then in brackets the acronym or vice versa. But you also, as part of your briefing paper, you want to focus on what is the impact of what you're asking for. Is there any compliance issues associated with it? As we said, risks, resourcing, so that you're really clear about what you're actually asking the board for. And don't present a 25-page briefing paper. Keep it to about 3 or 4.
Yeah, short as short as you can. Yeah, maybe there's almost like a summary of 2-3 pages and then there's more information.
So as added, don't be afraid to use attachments as well. So let's say you're asking for an investment in a new business and you've got some market analysis. You don't necessarily have to build the market analysis into your briefing paper, but you might have that as an attachment to the briefing that the board can go and look at.
Yeah, and I think it's this balance between you're asking the board to make a decision, so you need to present them with enough evidence that they can comfortably make the decision, but not drown them in evidence almost so that you're shying away from your recommendation, because you're almost going, oh, well, you guys make the decision. Whereas it's more that you want them to endorse your chosen course of action or your decision. Now, it's still their decision if we're talking strategic or outside delegations, but I think it's this balance where you've done the work, you have to show you've done the work, And you should be able to summarize the key points and the key risks and the implications for the business without it being a 20-pager. Now, it might be that you've got a board who's happy to have 3 or 4 pages and then an attachment, which has got more detail. But I think it is incumbent on you to be able to summarize it and put it in a way that the business case is compelling.
And should the board ask questions at the board meeting, which is they're likely to do, they're going to be testing that all that the depth in the background of the work, which is not necessarily reflected in great detail in the briefing paper, has actually been done. You do have all that, but you're not putting all of that detail into the briefing.
Yeah. And so I think I would try and make it as visually appealing as possible in the sense that, you know, tables, charts, bullets, headings, you know, just a paper laid out nicely. Obviously, if there's financial implications, you're going to run some numbers and you're going to have the numbers in there. But I think it's just not giving them, you know, something that looks like a book. It has to be something they can digest easily, which doesn't mean they still don't do the work, but I just think you need to do the work. And in doing the work, you probably understand it better too, right? Like, it actually makes you understand that if you've got to really synthesize it and make a good summary, possibly put it in table form, chart form, whatever, to the greatest extent possible. So yeah, what else? I guess in the risks, I guess I'm sticking on the risks, but you know, what are the other implications for the business in terms of financial, legal, reputational, stakeholders, you know, all that list has to be dealt with. And then what else? What else do we need to talk about?
Any clear timeframes and next steps. So the board also might want to see a very high level summary if it's for a particular project. They might want to see a very high level summary of particular milestones and what is expected to be achieved in those milestones and timeframes.
Yeah. And in fact, on that, what I've seen also sometimes is, if it's, especially if it's a big thing. So if it's like, you know, say for example, you need a new IT system of some sort, whether it's your CRM or your donors or whatever, right? It might be that you have this set out in phases. So you have your due diligence, you have your selection, you have your initial concept, whatever. But the board may also just want to approve it milestone by milestone, if it is possible, to control costs. You know, so I think when you are writing this, you have to think a little bit broadly about it and not such a linear way. What are ways to get the board across the line as well? So if they are risk adverse, or what you're asking for is possibly a bit risky, and I use that as a risk framework, as apart from you won't ask for something that's going to compromise the business, it may be that approval in milestones or approval in segments will still work for you. And it's more also about that reporting milestone. So the whole project might cost X, but they're happy to approve spending of a quarter X, subject to you coming back and reporting and saying, I've done, you know, a quarter of the work now. So now let's tick that milestone's achieved. You can approve spending of the next quarter and, you know, that work's done. So it could be a reporting in as well.
That approach can actually be really helpful in an environment where you're working with very imperfect or incomplete information. So where you kind of see an end goal, but there are a lot of known unknowns. And so you can step through it by stages, but make sure you're linking each next briefing paper to the one before in terms and the decisions and the discussions that have been made before. And this is why you're at this particular point. Because if you just, you know, depending on the meeting cadence, you know, some board meetings are monthly, some are every 2 months, some are every quarter. Director, if it is every quarter, directors won't necessarily be remembering everything that was presented in the last board meeting. So you need to be able to provide a linking statement. It's not a regurgitation. Don't re-prosecute the issue, but something that links it.
Yeah, but also to that point, if your meetings are only quarterly, you need more approval to do more things to get you through to the next board meeting. Because I think that comes down to, if you're presenting a business case, you're asking the board to sign off on something which you don't have authority yourself to do. So it's something new, strategic, or spending more money. And so the board is rightly going to be requiring evidence and to show that you've done the work, done the due diligence, that it's a proper business case. So I think coming up with options to also make them feel comfortable, that do they have to approve, you know, the whole $1 million straight away, or can they do it in bits? But thinking also, again, when's the next time you are in front of the board to ask for the approval for the next bit, or, you know, whatever. to show that things are all on track and the milestones are being hit. And the other point, which is around the timeline, like make sure you're getting the right approvals in the right time. But then as you were talking, I was also thinking of the other thing, which is, you know, you've got to sell it to the board, but it's not a sale, right? It's this is in the best interest of the business.
Don't overtalk it.
Yeah. This is something you think needs to be done. This is something you're recommending they do. But again, from that very neutral tone, right? Like it's not the we must do this because it's just not that language which is appropriate. So you have that very, this is it in our best interest and why, this is the risk of doing it, this is the risk of not doing it. So it's a very neutral expression. You can obviously recommend or ask for, but
absolutely. You're thinking that you're using your briefing paper to influence the board to make a decision that you, based on your analysis, your expertise, and the information that's present, is the best recommendation or the best decision to make. But you can't oversell that because often you're asking boards to make decisions in environments that are constantly moving or changing. There's lots of unknowns as well. So if you're going in with a big sales document or proposal, I would say that most directors would probably cut right through that. They'd see right through that and they would be possibly sending you back to go, you know, give me the more objective assessment of this, because, you know, the role that they have when they walk through the door is that they need to be objective, they need to be independent.
And test everything, right? Like they need to make sure that what they're doing is they're making the right decision. So they will definitely test it. So I think also from the mental headspace, assume that you're going to be really questioned. And that's a good thing, right? I think that take that as a good sign that the people are engaged and really questioning. So then I guess, you know, my pet hate, make sure it's laid out properly, make sure there's no spelling errors, you know, get someone to proofread it. If you've got a bunch of people in your senior executive, get someone to read it for you, make sure that it makes sense. You know, like just all those basic things, which are very basic, but, you know, if you're running late or it's, you know, 3 minutes before you're supposed to get it in, it's hard to do. But I really, really, really strongly suggest that you actually do it, because there's nothing worse than, you know, sloppy work, which actually doesn't reflect all the work that you've put into it. You know, having three spelling errors in the first page when you've worked really hard on something is just, you know, it's just disappointing, right? It doesn't show you in the best light. So very much numbers, paragraphs, spelling, like all the basic stuff, which I feel a bit kind of pedestrian saying it, but the number of times I've seen papers with errors and bad formatting, and it's just like, you know, be kind to yourself. Deliver something that also looks nice.
Because that also helps the reader too.
Oh, totally,
so,
totally.
Boring subject, but necessary subject, briefing papers. They are a tool that helps you as the CEO, and so use them as a tool in your toolkit, but they're also a tool for the board in being able to make decisions that assist the organization.
Yeah, 100%.
So if we were to sum that up, what are we saying? Have a briefing paper template, first and foremost.
Have a good template.
Have a good template.
Ask why. Why on earth is this going to the board?
And then what is it that you're asking the board to do with that briefing paper? Make sure that you've got things such as you said, you've got the date, who crafted it, if the committee's reviewed it, have they endorsed it, if there's any attachments, you want a recommendation in there, draft resolution if there's a decision being made, the analysis, the opportunity, risks as well. Anything else? A conclusion, obviously.
Conclusion. Oh, I think that's pretty good.
Use active
plain
tone.
Bullet,
I see
numbering.
A lot. Yeah, I see a lot of people who don't use active tone. They use very long, flowery sentences, a lot of hyperbole.
It's too hard.
Too hard to read.
Life's too hard for that.
That's right. Tables, bullets, those sorts of things.
You get the idea.
No operational jargon, no acronyms as well. And get someone else to proofread.
Read it 100%, 100%.
Yeah. And you will see improvements in your briefing paper.
Ta-da!
That's it.
Yay.
Yay to briefing papers.